Broadcasting live from Seattle, Washington, welcome to the Catherine Bradford Show.
Everyone, welcome back. This is the second hour of Catherine Bradford Show, and we're doing a special segment, one of my favorites, Everything Animal. You know me, I love to get on the air and talk about animals, and I'm very excited to have this next hour, a full hour, which is really great for me, rather than just a brief segment, to be able to bring back on the airwaves with me a wonderful woman who is, in her own way, doing so many wonderful things to help so many people in so many different ways. Anyway, it's great, and I'm so happy to have her with me, Ellie Lax. We have had her with us before on the show. Several weeks ago, I think, on Our View, we had Ellie come and join us because we were bringing you a news article that was about a group of cows that were too sick to go to slaughter, poor guys, and the owner didn't have the money to get them healthy enough and to take them to the auction house. And so I guess animal control had come on board. Oprah Winfrey heard about it, so brought attention to it, and hopefully we'll get the report and the update today. But this is the owner and founder of the Gentle Barn, and these are the group. This is the group that's going to be hopefully receiving all the healthy cows to their property and their facility when they get healthy enough to travel. So anyway, I'm very excited to have join me today, Ellie. Is it Lax, Ellie?
Lax, yeah.
Lax, very good. Hi, Ellie. How are you?
Hi, great. Great to be here.
You know, it's so funny. The show I just did on the air before you, we were talking about sound healing and sound vowels that are associated with different chakras. And it was so funny because I was thinking that the song Old MacDonald, whoever wrote it, must have really been into chakra vowel sounds, because it's E-I-E-I-O is the seventh, the fifth, and the third chakra sounds. Isn't that funny? So I was thinking, isn't that neat? You can teach your kids the Old MacDonald song and have them be intoning the chakra sounds.
That's amazing.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I never thought of it that way. But yeah, I thought, gee, I'll never hear E-I-E-I-O again without thinking of the chakras. But so anyway, welcome to the show. I'm so glad today we're going to have a really nice chance to, you know, champion you, talk about what's going on at the barn, how you guys again got started, what your goals are, and let's just start with an update about the cow rescue. What's going on with that?
Well, we're still kind of in the same place. The dairy has been shut down. He tried to get a license to transport He tried to get a license to transport the cows to slaughter, and he was denied because the cows were too sick. So mm-hmm. Now he's working with whatever agencies are involved to try to get the cows healthier. Once he's done with compliance with those agencies, then he'll get the transport license, and he'll call us.
Okay.
And at that time, he'll say, do you want them or do you not? And, of course, we'll say yes. But we're still waiting for that phone call. In the meantime, we did raise the $100,000 that we needed for our barn. And we've got a private benefactor that's going to put in a second barn. So right now we're working with the city for the permitting issues. Mm. Once we get the permit to build, we'll build the barn. Hopefully that'll happen before we get the phone call for the cows. And as soon as the barns are built, then when the call comes in, we'll be able to bring in those cows to nice, warm, cozy, soft beds to heal and to have their babies.
Right. Now, some of them are actually pregnant?
Most of them are pregnant, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's right, because I guess that's one of the things that they do for dairy cows is keep them pregnant, right? Because they want them to obviously keep producing milk. That's sort of a no-brainer, and I didn't remember that, but that's the truth with that one. Go ahead.
I think a lot of times people don't connect those dots. People think that cows probably just have milk coming out of them all the time.
Yeah.
And it's not true. They're mammals just like any other animal, so the only way they can have milk is by having a baby.
Yeah, isn't that sad? And then how long before they have to get pregnant again? Do you know that? Because I can't imagine you just could lactate on afterward.
Right. The cows in the dairy industry are impregnated. As soon as they have the baby's taken away. The cows are hooked up to machines so that humans can consume the milk. they are they produce milk for about 12 months to 18 months, and at that point their milk starts to dry up and they have to get pregnant again.
Wow.
So they basically give birth every year.
Wow. And I thought I was a cow. with all the kids I had, but yikes. Oh man, that's terrible. Well, you know, I know that, last time we were on the air, we were asking people to donate to help, you know, the cause. And it's so marvelous that you had a private benefactor pledge, you know, to match. So now you have two barns, which is just exciting as all get out. And I'm hoping that the synchronicity of timing, I'm sure I'll just see it in my mind that it's all positive and everything works well. And that'll be a great success story for you guys to, you know, have those cows. Cause is there still some risk here that the dairy that got shut down is going to maybe just say, oh, sorry, you can't take him. We're sending him off to the slaughterhouse.
First of all, he's assured us many, many times, you know, this is still happening. I'll mm-hmm. call you when I can.
Mm-hmm.
But also, he's not giving the cows to us for free. We have to actually match the slaughterhouse price.
Oh, boy.
So I think his philosophy is, hey, he's getting the same amount of money, but this way his cows don't have to be slaughtered. They can go on to have a good life. Because the dairy cows have supported him and his family for the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
So even though it's a business and it's all about money, I think if he can not have the cows go down in a horrible way, that would be a win-win for the man, too.
Good, good. So he does have a heart. Not to say that people who do that business don't, but, you know, it's nice to see that he has that. And, you know, it's interesting because I didn't even know. Do slaughterhouses accept pregnant animals?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Because, first of all, you can't tell if they're pregnant. Once a cow is into the pregnancy more than 3 months, you can't actually tell if they're pregnant. They just look really big. And for the slaughterhouse, that's perfect because they're by the pound. So a lot of people get the cows pregnant on purpose so that they can get more money for them at the slaughterhouse.
Well, that's ridiculous. That's just a heartbreaking thing. Ooh. Well, that's good. We're going to have to stay, stay in touch so we can figure out what the final story will be with that one. So let's go back to the very beginning, because I know you've been at this for quite a while, and you know, your story, of course, is the inspiration behind all the hard work that you and your husband do. And I want to acknowledge him too, Jay. Jay, is it Weiner for Jay's?
Yeah.
Okay. And so tell me, you know, I know it's a sad story, but it had a happy outcome. So what was the foundation of the groundwork for what got you motivated in the first place to even want to do this adventure?
You mean how did the gentle barn get started?
Yeah, or just what about you in your life that got you connected to animals and thinking that, you know, gee, this is something that, you know, when I get older, I'd like to find a way to do this work.
Yeah, well, I was one of those kids that kept bringing animals home. From the time I can remember, I mean, since I could walk, animals were always my best friends, my teachers, my healers. And I was always bringing ducks that got frozen in the lakes, or birds that fell out of their nests, or dogs and cats that were homeless. I was always bringing them home and healing them. And my parents weren't amused, so they would get rid of the animals when I was at school. When I would come home to find my animals gone, I would be very, very upset. And they would say, well, you know, when you grow up, you can have as many animals as you want. And I would say, well, you'll see. When I grow up, I'm going to have a big place full of animals, and I'm going to heal them and love them. And then I'm going to invite all the people of the world to come and see how amazing they are.
Mm.
So that's what started when I was 7 years old.
Mm.
I now have 180 animals. So I guess I took my parents literally.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was my dream when I was 7, was that I'm going to have this amazing place where I can love the animals and the animals are going to love the people back. And I procrastinated for a long time, but I did major in psychology and special ed, so I was preparing to kind of work with people and animals.
Right, because the other component of this is bringing in the wonderful piece of bringing in, you know, the children. And when you say, you know, it's just not a petting zoo, obviously. I mean, you're very, very involved in the community outreach programs for bringing in, especially children, you know, who are special needs, at-risk youth, school educational programs, lots of things that connect you in very positive ways to offer these children opportunities to, you know, have the same experience emotionally that you felt by having those animals around you when you were young, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it works in a really profound way. I mean, we work with the kids that traditional therapy doesn't work with because they're so shut down and so angry that there's no way they're going to sit and talk to a therapist on their couch. It's never going to happen. You can't talk directly to these kids.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just have a conversation with them about them because they're shut down.
Mm-hmm.
But we can talk about our animals that have their stories. And then through talking about the animals, we're indirectly talking to them, and they're all ears.
Mm-hmm. How do they get these kids in the first place, identify them, and get them, you know, to come, you know, voluntarily? Obviously, they're not, you know, put on the bus at force, you know, to come. And are they brought in large groups? Are they brought in one-on-one? You know, what are sort of the mechanisms, you know, for how you get, you know, connected to children who are that severely, you know, what would you call shut down, I guess is the best way to put it.
Well, we work with the agencies. So we work with kids and gangs on drugs from the inner city on probation. So we work with probation camps. We work with inner city schools. We work with foster homes. We work with special needs classes. And so the agencies themselves bring the kids. And it's the kids that they're having the most trouble with, the kids that aren't responding to their therapists, aren't doing well in school, are fighting with all their friends, the kids that have the least chance of a happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that they bring here to hopefully be able to reach them. And the animals do. The animals reach them when people can't.
How is it that when a child comes, like, off the bus and, you know, do they, you just say, come on over here, we're just going to tell you the story of this. I mean, do you do that in a group or you do it one-on-one or... And they come back repeated times to work with. Are they assigned an animal, or how does that work?
Well, it's a 10-month program.
Oh, a program. Okay, good.
Yeah, so it runs September through June, and usually we work with small groups. So the kids will come, and we'll have them sit down to start. And the first thing that we do is we ask them two questions. Because, first of all, we don't want them to think that this is yet another place that's just going to talk at them and lecture them. We want them to know that we care about who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that we do is we ask them what is the word that best describes them and what's their dream.
Mm.
First of all, they've never been asked that question before in their lives. Usually people are just lecturing them, telling them to shut up and sit down.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really, like, talks soul to soul with them and really cares about who they are inside.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives the kids the idea that we really want to see them. But it also gives us an idea of who the kids think they are, because a lot of times when we ask the kids what the word is that describes them, they'll say, oh, I'm a troublemaker, or I'm my mom's worst nightmare, or
mm-hmm.
I'm no good, or I'm dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives us something really tangible to work with, because mm-hmm. then we can start watching that child and really mirroring him on, wow, you just seem so generous when you let your friend pet the chicken first. And, wow, did you notice that that goat who never lets anyone touch him, that goat trusts you because you seem so safe.
Mm.
And, wow, I saw that when you pet the horse, you seem so gentle. And so we can start mirroring.